Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to another Mobility Management podcast. Today, I'm joined by Mark Schmaler and Barry Steelman from the University of Pittsburgh RSTCE to discuss the International Seating Symposium and its change of format for 2022. Mark Schmaler, PhD, OTRL, ATP, is the Vice Chair of Education and Training in the Department of Rehabilitation Science and Technology, School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences at the University of Pittsburgh. He is the Director for the International Seating Symposium and the Interim Director of the Center for Assistive Technologies Clinic at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Barry Steelman, founder of Steelman Marketing, has 30 years of experience in marketing and 20 years of experience in the DME industry. Barry's worked for major complex rehab technology manufacturers, and he joins us today because he's been working with Pittsburgh's ISS team. So, Mark, Barry, welcome to the podcast. We are just a couple of days into 2022, and already we've got some news to share. So I appreciate the opportunity to catch up. Thanks for being with me.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So right before Christmas, you sent out an email that said basically the ISS team was accessing all of its options for the 2022 International Seating Symposium. And the plan at that time, before Christmas, was for the 2022 ISS to offer both in-person and virtual attendance. That pre-Christmas email, of course, was in response to the Omicron variant, which unfortunately spread very rapidly across the country during the Christmas and New Year's holidays. And so on Monday, January 3rd, you announced that this year's ISS, which is at the end of this month, will offer only virtual attendance. So I wanted to start with the basics. The ISS is taking place as scheduled starting at the end of January. In addition to attendance being all virtual, the pre-conference workshops have been canceled because they're very hands-on types of classes that don't translate well to a virtual format. But we'll still have CEU courses, and they'll be presented according to the original course schedule that we have. And all presentations will be available both live and on demand, with CEUs available for recorded sessions as well. And we'll have a virtual exhibit hall to check out seating and mobility products. In fact, ISS had already planned a virtual registration option, but now everyone will attend virtually. So is that basically right? And what else should attendees know right now regarding the adjusted format for the show?
Yeah, thanks, Laura. You're right. That pretty much covers it. The ISS is going to take place at the same time, and it's just going to be virtual. All the sessions will be on the same days and times that they were originally scheduled. Basically, what it's going to look like to an attendee is there'll be a portal. Cvent is our conference management company that's taking care of that. It'll be pretty straightforward. You log in and you then click on the sessions. The plenaries will obviously be kind of the whole kingdom will be attending that. And then whatever concurrent sessions people signed up for, they'll be able to just go in and watch those at the times that they occur. And yes, everything's going to be recorded. So those will be available on demand afterwards. People can get their CEUs for the things they watch live, provided they do the course eval and the post-test. And then they can go back and watch all the other ones if they want to. So if you really think about it, if you really had the desire to watch all of them, you could really get 100 hours of contact hours or 10 CEUs out of the event. And we expect the recordings to be available, I'm guessing within a month, if not sooner, of when the conference ends, and we'll keep them up there for a year.
Okay, yeah. Great. Barry, I wanted to ask you about the expo hall, because that's always a place where people can see the latest and greatest and kick the tires. And of course, there's a lot of conversations that take place with the manufacturers. Yeah. What is that going to be like?
Well, so we understand that a lot of our manufacturers have been utilizing our platform in the CRT industry to introduce new product. And we wanted to provide them that virtual platform to introduce new product to the ATPs, OTs, and PTs like they would with an in-person event. So we've designed our virtual platform to be where attendees can just go to the site, pull down PDFs or watch videos, or they can request an in-person demonstration or an in-person meeting. So basically with a Zoom call, they could get a one-on-one presentation of the new product rather than just looking at a PDF. So it really kind of helps cross that bridge between virtual and in-person. You're just not getting to have the hands-on that everyone likes to have, but you can still get that one-on-one product demonstration time. And we're urging all of our manufacturers to take advantage of that. It's not anything that we're charging them for. It was a part of their in-person booth. So now that it's virtual only, there is a small charge for the virtual aspect of it. And we're excited about it. It's our first time, the hybrid event and the virtual offerings at ISS. And we're excited to make this a successful event for everyone involved.
Well, Mark, I wanted to also ask a follow-up question as far as the courses go. Are you going to be able to show the presentation? So if somebody had a PowerPoint presentation, that if you were there live, you would have seen the PowerPoint playing during the presentation. Is that going to be playing during the virtual presentation?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll look pretty much the same. Instead of sitting in a room, watching a speaker, looking at their PowerPoint, you're just going to be doing it online. It's going to be just like we do with all of our other online meetings. It's a little more complicated behind the scenes, but to the person attending, it should be pretty straightforward.
Okay, fantastic. And Barry, it sounds a little bit like a telehealth sort of presentation, a little bit with, I got to say, with the manufacturers doing the demos. I have to assume that some of that went on during the heart of the pandemic, where maybe manufacturers were doing a little bit of in-servicing, you know, telling people about their products in a way that will be kind of be similar for this ISS. So
yeah.
Obviously, you know, we know that this is not the outcome anybody was hoping for. We'd all been looking forward to getting together at the end of this month. But in the announcement, you explained that a number of factors impacted this decision, including that this is a healthcare industry and the health and the safety of attendees, exhibitors, the ISS team, the consumers that all of you serve are really your highest priorities. And also just logistically, since the University of Pittsburgh has postponed the resumption of in-person classes, logistically, you didn't have the staffing that you would need to put on a good in-person ISS. So what other factors, were there any other factors that went into this decision?
Yeah, I mean, the university is open. It's just that classes have been moved online until, you know, the end of the month at the earliest. But there's a lot of other factors associated with it too. So I guess the university saying they're not going to support us having a large in-person gathering was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. But, you know, we've been monitoring all of this for, gosh, almost 2 years now. I mean, we had to move last March to October and then October to January, figuring, I mean, by gosh, by January of 2022, this should all be behind us. Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen. So we've kind of been ready to pivot at any point. But when we looked at, you know, kind of like in November when Omicron, you know, started showing its ugly face in other countries and then eventually the United States, it didn't seem like it was that bad of a variant, and still maybe it isn't. But we have to take into consideration that we've learned a lot about this variant, especially over the last few weeks. And that's when, you know, over the break, our team started having almost daily meetings like, okay, what's going on here? And it's like, this will pass. But then, you know, the contagiousness of it is just mind-boggling. There are people getting this variant that you would never think would ever get COVID. They're the most diligent people, and they were getting it. Now, the symptoms are not that severe, and, you know, it's almost like a bad flu. Fortunately, I haven't had it yet. But the thing is, being that we are healthcare professionals, if we get it, we can't go to work and take care of patients. That means other people, you need to have a staff of, if you have to step out of the game, you've got to have some backups. So a lot of the hospitals are saying we don't, you know, we have a travel ban. I mean, the Veterans Administration just put a 60-day travel ban on all, you know, travel that's not mission critical, meaning an example, mission critical is moving clinicians from one facility to another because people are out sick. So that had to be taken into account. The other thing is, you know, even though it's not as severe as other variants, 2% of people who get it do go to the hospital, according to the CDC. And with almost twice the number of cases, you know, you just do the math and it's like, okay, we could be in a very difficult situation come mid-January, end of January. No one really knows when it's going to peak, how much it's going to peak. I mean, hopefully this is all behind us in February, but it's too late for the ISS anyways. So we had to take that into account. And I think even our ATP suppliers, it's the same thing. If one ATP gets it and has to be out for 5 to 10 days, someone else has to step in. But if people are gone, they're at ISS, they can't do that. Other factor is, you know, travel is not the best thing to do in this situation. Airports are probably the last place you want to be. We're all watching the news lately, and that seems to be kind of a disaster. So our concern is people could be traveling to Pittsburgh, pick up the variant, be a carrier, but not be infectious, but they could be a spreader. And then they could be spreading it throughout the conference, and then everybody goes back home after and continues to spread it. I mean, it could really put a huge tax on things. Now, people said, well, you know, we could just have everybody be tested every morning. Well, if you can find a test kit right now, you're lucky. There's been talk about more test kits becoming available. I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen as soon as they think it will. And will it be available, you know, at the end of the month? So if you take all those things into consideration, I mean, we were besides ourselves. I mean, we were even just yesterday, Monday, saying, do we really want to put this remote only? And it's like, well, first of all, we don't have a choice. The university said we have to. But even if the university hadn't said that, you take all these other factors into consideration, it's just not the wisest thing to do at this point. It's sad, but it is what it is. And we just, you know, we can complain about it and all we want, but we just got to get through it. And I think, you know, having the remote option is it's better than nothing. I think it'll be pretty successful. And we just got to look forward to the future.
Plus, frankly, we've gotten pretty good at this, right? I mean, as professionals, this isn't back in 2020, January 2020. I mean, we've gotten pretty good at doing video conferences. And so I, for one, saw that lineup and thought, oh my gosh, I can go to every single class. Has Mark thought about that?
Right.
Every single one. I also wanted to ask, though, from a financial perspective, I wanted to ask a question, because it's common for trade shows to be owned by media companies that specialize in events. I mean, I've worked for a magazine that was owned by an expo company, and we've seen a lot of expo companies during the pandemic these past years be pretty slow or pretty reluctant to change or cancel an event. Now, the International Seating Symposium isn't owned by an expo company, obviously. So I don't know if maybe the situation is a little bit different, but I did want to ask about how moving from an in-person and virtual format to a virtual-only format will impact the University of Pittsburgh, because also keeping in mind that last year we saw Sunny Hill Health Center cancel what at that time was going to be their 2022 ISS in Vancouver. So what does this decision for January's event mean for this particular event and for the future of ISS?
That's a good question. Yes, finances are very important. We've been doing a lot of math recently. First of all, yes, the ISS is a university, sort of small business within the university, for a lack of a better term. We do have a tight budget. It's not for profit. A lot of the people that participate in running the ISS are doing it on a voluntary basis. That includes, for the most part, myself, but we have a very small staff. Our biggest expense for the ISS is obviously the venue itself. The food is not cheap. The hotel room block is not cheap. The AV, all the necessary components to an event do cost a lot of money. Fortunately, you know, we moved it twice. We've been very lucky that our contractors have been very flexible. And that is probably a lot to do with the fact that we are in Pittsburgh. They're sort of our brethren here in the city. You know, the hotels especially, the convention center has said, hey, look, you know, it is what it is, but we know you're going to be coming back in the future. And we're willing to, you know, give you another pass. Plus, we have the, you know, the clauses in contracts, the force majeure clauses that they're all willing to respect. So having it remotely only actually turns out to probably that we wouldn't have to take a big hit. We're probably going to take a hit, but it's not going to be as bad. It's sort of like the analogy I use. It costs the same amount of money to put a plane in the air if you've got two passengers or a full flight. So if we did do in person and, you know, 200 people showed up, we'd still be on the hook, even food for that matter, and the hotel room block. But canceling it allows us to just push that onto future ISSs. So we're very fortunate, at least right now, all of our contractors are willing to be flexible with us. I mean, as far as Vancouver, that's an unfortunate situation. It really was not because of COVID. It was that the university continuing education program there decided to no longer support conferences, and there weren't many other options for them. So we are looking very carefully at taking this on every year moving forward.
Okay, because I think that's really sort of the bright spot, is kind of looking forward, and as hard as this is this year to not be there in person, and I will be missing the French fry topped salads that you introduced me to a couple of years back. I think ultimately our big concern is what this does to the International Seating Symposium going forward. We understand, you know, that it is what it is today. We just want to hear some reassurance that going forward, it's going to be okay when we can eventually, you know, get back together. So right now you have an April 2023 schedule for the International Seating Symposium, which is just a little over a year when you think of it in those terms. Yep. Do you have any additional details going forward? I mean, is it fair to say that, look, this year is kind of it's just something we can't control, but going forward, our mission hasn't changed.
No, has not changed at all. No. We definitely have 2023 on the books. We have 2025 on the books. Those were put on the books 3 years ago, and we're starting to talk about what would 2024 look like.
Yeah.
So it's basically a matter right now of getting through the 2022 International Seating Symposium, staying as safe as we can during that. It sounds also, though, as you mentioned, that because these are going to be recorded sessions, that it might be a good time for people to really consider how they could get the most out of this new format. Because if you've got somebody already registered, they can watch the different sessions and listen to the different sessions quite a ways afterward. And because virtual attendance or registration is less expensive than in person, you're not feeding them those salads, for instance, this might also be a good opportunity for people to consider maybe opening it up and letting some additional people attend. Is that something that's still an opportunity for people to sign up, or has that window closed?
No. We'll be taking registrations up until the event itself. So most people don't register until about 2 to 3 weeks out anyways. So that's going to be an option. And I think we will always have a remote option moving forward. I think that's extremely important. There are many people that live far away or, you know, don't have the resources. You know, we're a university and we're all about making information available to people, empowering people, especially in the world of CRT. I think that's extremely important. And kind of to what you were saying too is, you know, this is a university venue. We certainly want to preserve it. I think it's important that every field, every industry at least have one event that takes place that is managed by the university to keep things, you know, on track. So okay. We have the full support from the University of Pittsburgh. So I'm not worried about the future at all.
Okay. Great.
I'm hoping one thing, Laurie. When Mark asked me to come on staff with these guys, I thought, how can I benefit them? And during this time, one thing that really hit me is this is an opportunity to change the way that exhibitors utilize their time at a conference. There's those times when people are in session and exhibitors, manufacturers are sitting in their booth and they're not really doing anything. Hopefully this opens up that opportunity to set up some virtual presentations during that downtime in future conferences. So in 2023, yes, hopefully we're going to be in person, but we're not going to do away with that virtual option. So they can set up some meetings while sessions are in and they don't have as many people in their booth. They can still be presenting new product to those that may not be able to attend ISS.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. That was good. And I would say it's been great bringing Barry on because he does come from industry, understands exhibits and the industry and how it works. So it's really helped keep everything well represented and balanced. We do respect that the exhibit hall is also just as important of a customer as the attendees and the speakers are.
Well, it just sounds like there is a similarity here to telehealth. The argument for telehealth is that there's always going to be that client, that family that finds it very difficult to get to clinic, whether it's because they're very far away or transportation is an issue or whatever the situation is. The pandemic going away or coming under control is not going to make it easy for 100% of complex rehab clients to be able to get to clinic easily. And it sounds like along those lines that it will always be more challenging for some clinicians and suppliers to get to the International Seating Symposium, regardless of where it is. It could be a travel issue or funding issue, a time issue, maybe a little bit of all of the above. So getting a virtual component up and running just sounds a little bit proactive actually for future plans.
Yeah, and it's not one or the other. I mean, you get some of your education online and some of it is well served online and you kind of build up to an in-person. I mean, the same with telehealth. We do a lot of, you know, the client doesn't have to come in multiple times. They can maybe reduce the number of visits to the clinic, but because we can handle a lot of the preliminary work up front remotely. And then, you know, the in-person is more focused, it's more meaningful, it's more hands-on, and it's same thing with continuing education.
Okay, any final comments, anything we should know about going forward that we haven't already talked about?
Nope, it's going to be a great event. Sorry we can't have that in-person component, but I still think it's going to be a great event, and I'm looking forward to seeing everyone. I know today's Tuesday, and this will probably, by the time this comes out, people will have been notified. But if they haven't, we put out the notification yesterday, but there's certainly a lot more detail that we're just finishing up right now, and we'll be getting that out to attendees, speakers, exhibitors, volunteers, and all stakeholders.
And I will say that the manufacturers that I've spoken with have been very accommodating, very understanding, patient. Yep. And willing to work with us. So we really appreciate that during this time.
Yep. Everybody's been extremely supportive.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Mark, Barry, for sharing additional insights about this month's International Seating Symposium. And for additional information to stay up to date, you can go to the ISS website, which is www.iss.pitt.edu. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe, and you can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back again soon.